Arthur Schopenhauer's The World as Will and Representation stands as one of philosophy's most audacious challenges to human complacency. While most philosophers of his era celebrated reason and progress, Schopenhauer boldly declared that existence itself is fundamentally suffering. This wasn't merely academic pessimism, it was a revolutionary framework that would later influence figures from Nietzsche to Freud, Wagner to Wittgenstein, and even modern mindfulness practices. Steve Jobs famously kept this book by his bedside, drawn to its unflinching confrontation with reality's harsh truths. Schopenhauer's vision resonates today with renewed urgency as we navigate our hyper-connected yet increasingly anxious world. His insight that desire creates suffering mirrors Buddhist wisdom, while his recognition that we are driven by forces beyond our conscious control anticipated modern psychology by decades. What makes this 19th century German philosopher so compelling is not just his intellectual brilliance, but his courage to stare into the abyss of existence and report back with clarity, wit, and even compassion. Schopenhauer begins with a statement both simple and revolutionary: "The world is my representation." This isn't solipsism. He's not claiming the world doesn't exist outside our minds. Rather, he's arguing that everything we experience is fundamentally filtered through and constructed by our consciousness. The desk before you, the sounds around you, even your own body, all exist for you only as mental representations. This insight builds upon Kant's revolutionary Copernican turn in philosophy. Just as Copernicus showed that Earth revolves around the Sun, not vice versa, Kant demonstrated that our minds don't passively receive reality, but actively structure it. Schopenhauer embraces this view, but pushes further, arguing that space, time, and causality, the fundamental frameworks through which we experience reality, are not properties of things themselves, but forms imposed by our minds. Consider how we experience a tree. We perceive it as having a particular size, location, and as existing in time. But these qualities don't belong to the thing in itself, what Kant called the noumenon. They're features of our representation. The tree, as it exists independently of our perception, remains forever inaccessible to us directly. No object without a subject becomes Schopenhauer's rallying cry. The world we experience is always a world that appears to someone, a conscious subject. This isn't merely abstract theorizing, it fundamentally changes how we understand science and knowledge. When physicists describe atoms and forces, they're not describing reality as it is, but reality as it appears through human conceptual frameworks. This perspective resonates surprisingly with modern neuroscience. When we see the color red, for instance, nothing red exists outside us, only light waves of particular frequencies that our visual system interprets as red. Our entire perceptual world is a sophisticated virtual reality generated by our nervous system, not a direct window onto things as they really are. If the world we experience is merely representation, what lies behind this veil of appearance? Here, Schopenhauer makes his most original move. While Kant claimed the thing in itself was forever unknowable, Schopenhauer argues we have direct access to reality's inner nature through our own bodies. When I raise my arm, I experience this action in two ways: externally as physical movement, representation, and internally as an act of will. This dual knowledge of our own bodies provides the key to understanding reality's hidden essence. The will we experience directly in ourselves is the same force that constitutes the inner nature of all existence. The body is nothing but objectified will, Schopenhauer declares. What we experience as desires, drives, and impulses is the direct manifestation of the same metaphysical will that animates all of nature. This will isn't conscious or rational. It's a blind, insatiable striving that manifests differently at various levels of reality. In inorganic nature, the will appears as fundamental forces like gravity and magnetism. In plants, it manifests as growth and phototropism. In animals, it becomes increasingly complex instincts and desires. In humans, it reaches its highest objectification as conscious, deliberate wanting, yet remains fundamentally the same blind impulse driving all existence. This insight transforms how we understand natural phenomena. The endless cycle of predator and prey, the ceaseless competition for resources, the relentless drive to reproduce, all reveal the will's insatiable nature. Even human civilization, with its apparent rationality, merely disguises the same fundamental striving. Consider how we pursue goals. We believe achieving them will bring lasting satisfaction, yet once attained, they quickly lose their allure and new desires arise. This endless cycle, desire, temporary satisfaction, new desire, reveals the will's fundamentally insatiable character. As Schopenhauer puts it, the will can never be satisfied. Every goal achieved becomes merely the starting point of a new striving. From his Metaphysics of Will emerges Schopenhauer's most notorious conclusion: life is essentially suffering. This isn't mere pessimism, but follows logically from his understanding of reality's fundamental nature. If existence is blind will, endless striving without ultimate purpose, then suffering becomes inevitable. All willing arises from lack or deficiency, making pain the positive, immediate reality of life. Pleasure is merely the temporary removal of pain, a negative state that quickly gives way to new desires or to boredom. Life, Schopenhauer famously declares, swings like a pendulum between pain and boredom. When our immediate needs and desires press upon us, we experience pain and anxiety. When they're temporarily satisfied, we experience boredom, the vacant restlessness revealing the will's inability to find lasting fulfillment. This perspective explains why technological progress and material abundance haven't eliminated human suffering. Modern society has conquered many sources of physical pain, yet anxiety, depression, and existential emptiness persist. As our basic needs are met, the will simply generates new desires, keeping us perpetually dissatisfied. Consider how quickly we adapt to improvements in our circumstances. A new car or home brings momentary joy, but soon becomes the unremarkable baseline of our experience. Meanwhile, even minor discomforts command our full attention. This asymmetry between pleasure and pain, what psychologists now call hedonic adaptation, reflects the will's fundamental nature. Schopenhauer's analysis extends beyond individual psychology to social dynamics. The will's self-conflict manifests in human society as competition, exploitation, and war. Each person, experiencing themselves as the center of reality, pursues their interests at others' expense. Even apparent altruism often masks subtle forms of self-interest. Yet Schopenhauer isn't advocating despair. Understanding suffering's inevitability can actually liberate us from unrealistic expectations and the additional suffering they create. By recognizing life's inherent difficulty, we can develop compassion for ourselves and others caught in the same predicament. If life is fundamentally suffering, is there any escape? Schopenhauer offers two paths of liberation, the first being aesthetic contemplation. In rare moments, particularly when engaged with great art, we can temporarily step outside the will's endless striving. Ordinary perception serves the will's purposes, focusing on objects' usefulness or threat to our desires. Aesthetic contemplation, by contrast, suspends this utilitarian perspective. When we truly appreciate a painting, piece of music, or natural landscape, we momentarily cease being individuals with particular desires and become pure, will-less subjects of knowledge. This transformation explains art's profound effect on us. In aesthetic experience, we temporarily escape the prison of our individual concerns and perceive things not in relation to our will, but as they are in themselves, or rather, as Platonic ideas, the eternal patterns underlying particular phenomena. Different art forms accomplish this liberation in different ways. architecture reveals the fundamental forces of gravity and rigidity in their eternal conflict. Sculpture and painting present the ideas of human and natural forms. Literature and drama depict the eternal patterns of human character and conflict. But music holds a special place in Schopenhauer's aesthetic theory. Unlike other arts that represent ideas, which are themselves objectifications of will, music directly expresses the will itself. It doesn't depict particular emotions, but their abstract essence, the dynamic movements of striving, tension, resolution, and renewed striving that constitute will's inner nature. This explains music's unique power to move us. When we're transported by a symphony, we're not merely hearing pleasant sounds, but experiencing a direct revelation of reality's innermost essence. Music speaks to us so profoundly because it speaks the will's own language. While aesthetic contemplation offers genuine liberation, Schopenhauer acknowledges its limitations. The escape is temporary. We inevitably fall back into ordinary consciousness and the will's demands. For more lasting liberation, we must turn to ethics and asceticism. Schopenhauer's ethical vision emerges directly from his metaphysics. If the will is the inner essence of all beings, then the apparent separation between individuals is ultimately illusory. We are all manifestations of the same fundamental reality. This metaphysical foundation sets his ethics apart from traditional Western moral philosophy, which typically begins with the individual as an isolated moral agent. Most people remain trapped in what Schopenhauer calls the principium individuationis, the principle of individuation created by space and time. Seeing themselves as separate entities, they pursue self-interest at others' expense, creating a world of conflict and suffering. This egoistic perspective manifests in countless ways: economic competition, social status seeking, and even interpersonal relationships based on utility rather than genuine connection. The ethical person, however, begins to see through this illusion, through what Schopenhauer terms metaphysical insight. They recognize that the suffering of others is fundamentally their own suffering, since all beings share the same essential nature. This recognition manifests as compassion, Mitleid, literally suffering with, which Schopenhauer considers the foundation of all genuine morality. This compassion extends beyond human beings to include animals, whom Schopenhauer saw as fellow sufferers in the universal drama of will. All true and pure love is compassion, he writes, and every love that is not compassion is selfishness. Even what appears as romantic love or friendship contains this element of recognizing ourselves in others. When we truly love someone, we experience their joys and sorrows as our own, transcending the boundaries of individual existence. This explains why genuine love often involves self-sacrifice, not as a denial of self-interest, but as an expression of a deeper understanding of selfhood. This perspective stands in stark contrast to Kant's ethics, which grounds morality in abstract rational principles. For Schopenhauer, ethical behavior springs not from rational calculation, but from intuitive recognition of our fundamental unity with all beings. The compassionate person doesn't need moral rules or divine commandments. They naturally act with kindness because they directly perceive others' suffering as their own. This intuitive approach to ethics explains why some people seem naturally more compassionate than others. They have gained greater insight into the underlying unity of existence. This ethical vision resonates deeply with Eastern traditions, particularly Buddhism and Hinduism. The Sanskrit phrase "tat tvam asi," that art thou, which Schopenhauer frequently quotes, expresses the same insight that compassion arises from recognizing our essential identity with all beings. He saw in these traditions a validation of his own philosophical insights, particularly in Buddhism's emphasis on compassion and the illusoriness of the separate self. This connection helped introduce Eastern thought to Western philosophy, influencing later thinkers and contributing to the growing dialogue between Eastern and Western philosophical traditions. The practical implications of this ethical vision are far-reaching. It suggests that moral education should focus less on rules and more on developing insight into our shared nature. It also implies that practices like meditation, which help dissolve the sense of separate selfhood, have profound ethical significance. Most importantly, it suggests that true ethical behavior cannot be imposed from outside, but must arise from a transformation in how we perceive ourselves and our relationship to others. While compassion mitigates suffering, Schopenhauer's ultimate solution is more radical, the complete denial of the will to live. This doesn't mean physical suicide, which he considers a mistaken affirmation of will, but rather a profound spiritual transformation in which one ceases to identify with individual desires and the endless cycle of wanting. Suicide, in Schopenhauer's view, paradoxically affirms the will by seeking to escape particular circumstances while still clinging to the fundamental desire for a different kind of existence. This denial occurs when the knowledge of suffering becomes so complete that it acts as a quieter of the will. The person who achieves this state no longer strives for individual goals, but enters a condition of willlessness. They continue to live and act in the world, but without attachment to outcomes or personal advantage. This state resembles what Buddhists call non-attachment, or what Stoics termed acceptance, a profound equanimity in the face of life's vicissitudes. Schopenhauer finds examples of this transformation in religious ascetics across traditions, Christian saints like Francis of Assisi, Hindu sannyasis who renounce worldly life, Buddhist monks practicing severe austerities, and Sufi mystics who embrace poverty. Despite their different theological frameworks and practices, all manifest the same fundamental insight, that liberation comes through renouncing individual desire. Each tradition describes this state through its own metaphors, union with God, moksha, nirvana, but points to the same essential experience. This state isn't achieved through intellectual understanding alone, but typically requires profound suffering or direct insight into life's fundamental nature. When someone has experienced life's horrors directly, whether through personal tragedy, severe illness, witnessing others' pain, or confronting mortality, they may reach the point where the will turns against itself. The individual recognizes that the source of suffering is not particular circumstances, but willing itself. This recognition can come suddenly, like Paul's conversion on the road to Damascus, or gradually through years of contemplation and experience. What remains when the will is denied? Schopenhauer acknowledges that from our perspective, still trapped in willing, this appears as nothing. Yet he suggests this nothingness is only relative to our ordinary experience, much as silence appears as nothing to those immersed in noise. For those who have achieved this transformation, it represents not emptiness but liberation, a state beyond the categories of our will-driven understanding. It's a positive state that our negative concepts can't capture. This perspective aligns with mystical traditions that describe the ultimate reality as ineffable, beyond conceptual understanding. Just as we cannot describe color to someone born blind or explain three-dimensional space to a being living in two dimensions, we cannot adequately conceptualize the state beyond will using language shaped by willing. The experience can only be pointed to through metaphor, paradox, and negative theology, describing what it is rather than what it is. Schopenhauer's philosophy represents one of Western thought's most profound challenges to conventional assumptions. By placing will rather than reason at reality's center, he undermined the Enlightenment's confidence in rational progress. His revolutionary insight that the world is fundamentally irrational will rather than logical order struck at the heart of traditional philosophical optimism. By identifying existence itself with suffering, he questioned the optimistic belief that increasing knowledge and material abundance would create human happiness, arguing instead that human desires inevitably lead to disappointment and pain. His insights anticipated major developments in later thought with remarkable prescience. Freud's concept of the unconscious clearly echoes Schopenhauer's view that conscious reasoning is merely the surface of a deeper volitional reality. The idea that our rational thoughts are often just rationalizations for deeper unconscious drives appears throughout Schopenhauer's work decades before psychoanalysis. Nietzsche, though rejecting Schopenhauer's ascetic solution, built upon his critique of rationalism and recognition of will's primacy, developing these insights into his own philosophy of power and becoming. Wittgenstein acknowledged Schopenhauer's influence on his understanding of language's limits, particularly in relation to what can and cannot be meaningfully expressed. Beyond philosophy, Schopenhauer profoundly shaped artistic and cultural movements across multiple domains. Wagner's operas, particularly Tristan und Isolde, directly express Schopenhauerian themes of desire and renunciation, with its story of impossible love reflecting the futility of worldly attachment. Thomas Mann's novels, especially Death in Venice and The Magic Mountain, explore the tension between intellect and will that Schopenhauer identified as fundamental to human experience. His influence extends to literature through writers like Jorge Luis Borges and Samuel Beckett, who were drawn to his insights about the nature of reality and suffering. Even contemporary mindfulness practices echo his recognition that stepping back from identification with desires can reduce suffering, anticipating aspects of Buddhist thought that would later gain prominence in Western culture. What makes Schopenhauer uniquely valuable today is his unflinching confrontation with life's difficulties, combined with genuine compassion. Unlike many pessimists, he doesn't counsel despair, but offers practical paths toward liberation through aesthetic contemplation, ethical awareness, and ascetic practices. His emphasis on art as a temporary escape from the will's endless striving provides a sophisticated framework for understanding aesthetic experience. By understanding suffering's universality, we develop compassion for ourselves and others, recognizing that all beings are united in their experience of pain. By recognizing desire's insatiable nature, we can avoid the endless pursuit of satisfaction through external objects and instead seek peace through understanding and acceptance. In contemporary discussions of happiness, meaning, and the limits of technological progress, Schopenhauer's insights remain remarkably relevant. His critique of endless striving and material accumulation speaks directly to our consumer culture's limitations. His emphasis on compassion as arising from the recognition of shared suffering offers a powerful alternative to both naive optimism and cynical despair. Schopenhauer's vision culminates in what might be called the wisdom of resignation. Not passive acceptance of injustice, but recognition of existence's fundamental nature and the limits of individual striving. This wisdom manifests in several practical attitudes. First is moderation in expectations. Understanding that satisfaction is always temporary helps us avoid the endless pursuit of new pleasures and possessions. We can enjoy what we have without believing that the next achievement or acquisition will bring lasting happiness. Second is compassion toward others. Recognizing that everyone struggles with the same fundamental condition, being manifestations of an insatiable will, we develop patience with others' flaws and suffering. Their aggression and selfishness spring from the same source as our own. Third is appreciation of moments free from willing. Whether in aesthetic contemplation, intellectual understanding, or compassionate action, we can value those rare instances when we temporarily transcend individual striving. These moments, though fleeting, offer glimpses of what liberation might mean. Finally, there's the recognition that suffering itself can have meaning. By revealing existence's fundamental nature, suffering can lead to profound insight and transformation. The person who has suffered deeply often develops wisdom and compassion unavailable to those whose lives have been easier. Schopenhauer's philosophy remains challenging precisely because it confronts truths we prefer to ignore. Yet in an age of environmental crisis, political polarization, and technological disruption, his clear-eyed assessment of human nature offers valuable perspective. By understanding the will's relentless operation in ourselves and others, we might develop the compassion and restraint needed to address our collective challenges. As Schopenhauer himself put it, "A happy life is impossible. The highest that man can attain is a heroic life." This heroism consists not in grand achievements, but in facing reality without illusion while maintaining compassion for all beings caught in the same predicament. In a world increasingly dominated by wishful thinking and denial, such clear-sighted compassion may be exactly what we need. Schopenhauer's insight that the same will manifests throughout nature transforms our relationship with the natural world. When we recognize that the force driving our own desires is fundamentally the same as that expressing itself in animals, plants, and even inorganic processes, we develop a profound sense of kinship with all existence. This universal will appears in the striving of plants toward sunlight, the territorial instincts of animals, the chemical bonds between atoms, and the gravitational pull between celestial bodies. This perspective anticipates modern ecological consciousness in remarkable ways. If we are not fundamentally separate from nature, but expressions of the same underlying reality, then environmental destruction becomes self-destruction. The will to live manifesting in endangered species and ecosystems is ultimately the same will that constitutes our own being. We can observe this unity in countless natural phenomena. The maternal instinct shared across species, the universal drive for survival, and the common patterns of competition and cooperation found at all levels of life. Schopenhauer's philosophy thus offers a metaphysical foundation for environmental ethics. We protect nature not merely because it serves our interests or because we find it beautiful, but because we recognize our essential unity with it. This understanding transforms our relationship with animals, whom Schopenhauer saw as our younger brothers, sharing in the same fundamental essence of will. The suffering of animals and the destruction of natural systems are not separate from human concerns, but expressions of the same universal will. This perspective is particularly relevant in addressing issues like factory farming, habitat destruction, and species extinction. This recognition doesn't require accepting all of Schopenhauer's metaphysical framework. Even understood as a poetic or psychological insight rather than a metaphysical truth, the recognition of our continuity with nature has profound ethical implications. We can observe this continuity in our emotional responses to nature, our instinctive fear of predators, our attraction to landscapes that offered safety to our ancestors, our capacity to bond with animals. By seeing ourselves in all things, we expand the circle of our moral concern beyond human interests to embrace all manifestations of life. In a world facing unprecedented environmental challenges, from climate change to mass extinction, Schopenhauer's vision offers not just philosophical depth, but practical wisdom. His insights suggest that environmental protection is not merely a matter of preserving resources for future use, but of recognizing and respecting the same fundamental reality that constitutes our own being. By understanding ourselves as expressions of the same will that animates all nature, we might develop the compassion and restraint needed to address our ecological crisis. The mirror of nature reflects our own essence back to us. In the eyes of animals, the growth of forests, the flow of rivers, and the cycles of ecosystems, if only we have the courage to look and accept our fundamental unity with all life.